Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint 101. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and today we are going to finally be talking about Mad Max, the Avalanche game from 2015. It has taken us much longer than we intended. Apologies for that. But to make up for it, I come bearing gifts. I come bearing the beautiful, deep voice of Rob Zachney.
Hello, everybody.
Did you try to, like, mute? Ooh, okay. You're just really going to win people over with your dulcet tones.
That's my plan.
There it is. I also bring two special guests, and this is the real special. This is the special Waypoint Touch is, you know, we have all these great freelancers who write for us week in, week out about video games, and two of them have hopped on board today. Dante Douglas, you wrote about Mad Max for us. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm very glad to be here. It's kind of odd to be hearing Austin talking to me and not just talking and then right. Me just laughing alone in my house. So,
please participate in the conversation. It will help quite a bit.
I will try. Yeah.
I appreciate that I talked and you immediately started laughing as if you were alone in your house.
Classic Austin Zingers.
Welcome to the podcast. Oh, that's my favorite Austin line. And also from Ranged Touch, Cameron Kunzelman.
Hi there, everybody. I'm doing my Rob impression. Is that
that's a pretty good Rob impression.
Cam Chef, my through. Man. Welcome to the Mad Max show.
Yeah. God.
Cam Shaft? Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Would that be Cameron? What would the okay? First topic. What would everybody's post-apocalyptic Mad Max nickname be? Cameron's is clearly Cam Shaft.
It's Cam Shaft. It's too good.
It's maybe the best one.
I don't. None of our other names are parts.
Here's the other problem with this. This is not actually as easy as it sounds because the nomenclature and a lot of the way it's used and the speech around it in this Mad Max game,
yeah,
is actually pretty good.
Right.
Like the nouns that are used are actually really clever. The weird dialect.
Yes.
That people speak in about machines and the way they sort of describe their understanding of the world isn't something that I'm like, it is very hard for me to ad lib something that's as good as like barks in this world sound like.
So you're saying Zack Attack? Is that the one that you're going to use then? You're the Zack Attack?
Yeah, Zack Attack.
Okay.
Rob Easy.
Rob Easy. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry, Rob. I was hearing that, and I'm like, I don't know if I agree at all with that. Like, there's an enemy in this game called Deep Fryer. Or it's not even an enemy. That's right, like, it's like right. A buddy. I'm is like, he, that's not...
But is he Deep Fryer like a deep fryer, or is he Deep Fryer like a fryer, like a monk?
It's saved? Both. It's both, right? Because that's his... Sorry, I'm jumping ahead, but
we are.
I hated the names in this game. I was like, half of these are just dick jokes. Like,
well, a lot of them are, which I think maybe that unevenness is the story to tell about Mad Max.
Yeah.
Avalanche is 2015, open world action game in which you play as Max, I never know how to pronounce his last name.
Rokitansky,
who is traveling across the wastelands hoping to escape into the big nothing and drive across the seabed to
the Plains of Silence.
Right, where he can
which
finally...
Which sounds really fucking good right now.
Yo, 2018 sucks.
And like Mad Max's quest to log off.
Along the way, what he ends up doing is getting his car smashed in by the one of the children of Immortan Joe, the antagonist of Fury Road, presumably almost killing that guy, failing to actually kill that guy, and then getting a bunch of other innocent people killed on his way to try to escape this part of the wastelands. I should say right now we're going to get into some serious spoiler territory for this game, and that is just the nature of this conversation. We want to really go with, you know, safeties off, no limiters on this engine. So really going to dig in. But I think that maybe talking about the writing is maybe not the worst place to start. And the first note that I made was actually kind of in line with what Rob was saying, which was specifically about the character Chum Bucket. Early on in the game, Max, in an attempt to replace his stolen interceptor, begins the quest of building the magnum opus, a sort of a car that this character Chum Bucket, who is a black hand, a black finger. Who's a type of an incredibly powerful and knowledgeable mechanic, believes is a kind of a relic, a holy object filled with glorious power. And the first note I wrote down about Chum Bucket was that I loved his dialect because it forced me to pay attention to narrative beats I would otherwise completely ignore. I was constantly in a very active audience role compared to what I normally am in the beginning parts of open world action games, where I'm just kind of like, yeah. He's in the Assassins. I get it. Whereas here, I'm like, okay, what the fuck is Chum Bucket talking about? And that endeared me to that character very early on. What did y'all think about Chum Bucket and maybe about the writing in general?
It's awful.
It's not good.
Can I come out hot?
Please. I think this is good because we have a range of opinions on this.
I'm spitting fuel in the
guzzling. God damn it! If you're going to critique this, at least get on its level.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I just don't. I like Mad Max. I mean, maybe, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but
right.
I like
a series. You're saying?
Yeah, as all of it. I like Beyond Thunderdome. I like The Road Warrior. I like the original Mad Max. They're all different. I like Fury Road. And this feels like bad fan fiction. And I like fan fiction. I'm not, that is not a critique of the form, but it's as if someone watched all of those things, which are very different works, right? Like,
right.
They share elements, but they have very, very different concerns. And they were like, all right, well, let's, the toe cutter kind of talks a little bit weird, so let's jam some of that in. And the assless chaps guy, like, yeah, I like the way that he hollers. Let's, like, get that in there, too. So it feels like a greatest hits if someone didn't know what was good about something.
Yeah, I very, very agree with that. That was, like, overall my feeling with that game. Even though I think I'm probably more positive on it than Cam, but, like, I overwhelmingly, especially with the character design and, like, the character interactions, I was just like, this, yeah, it reads like bad fan fiction. It reads like someone's, like, I think... If Fury Road is this beautiful crystallization of all this different stuff that is Mad Max by Avalanche just felt like weird and stumbling, and I really didn't like Max, and I really didn't like Chum Bucket, and mostly I was like, all right, I'm just going to mash my way through all these cutscenes so I can get to the part that I like, which is driving the car really fast. Like, and that part's great.
That car feels good. Yeah, that car
feels
fantastic.
So good. Yeah,
we'll talk about that too.
I mean, I think something that's really important about that, I'm glad that you phrased it that way, Dante, because this is, I think, the core of my problem. I, you know, like, I'm not super happy with the dialect and all of that kind of stuff, but even at a more baseline narrative level, who is Max?
That part of it, I think, is the truest. Here's my should you buy this game recommendation, criticism.
I didn't.
Right, one. I did. I did. I think I bought it twice by mistake. But the I would say, oh, he's nothing. He's an empty character. There's nothing there. You won't find a good character here. My, like, actual crit take is I think he's a gamer cipher in the most anti-gamer way you could possibly imagine. In that the culmination of his character is that, and I don't think this is, like, clever criticism on the part of the game writers, necessarily. I think it's more of, like, the world of gaming produces its own the world produces contradictions, and from those contradictions sprout change and sprout potential other lenses for which to view the world. The end of this game, I just say it right away, is all of the innocent people you kill or get killed by your indifference and refusal to recognize their humanity telling you to kill other people, because that is the only way that you, gamer, can understand other characters. Even the ones who have literally immediately, prior to the version of them in your head begging you to do justice for them, were begging you not to hurt them or not to do a thing that would hurt them. Literally, with Chum Bucket, that is the last thing he does, say, don't destroy this car. This car is super important to me. I want to protect this car. And you go, get off the car, and then you jump out of your car and kill Chum Bucket. And then the next step is him being in your head saying, you should kill these people. These people hurt me. And it's like, that's not what happened. So I think that there is a version of this that I can see what they were going for, at least. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that they spent any time sticking the landing throughout the entirety of the game.
I definitely feel like the way that I best describe this game to people a lot is like, it's like if someone used all the aesthetics of Fury Road, but with all of like the narrative story beats of the 80s movies. Mm-hmm. And even that, like I said before, I don't think it like really nails that. But what I mean by that really is that like, I think the better 80s movies did this thing where they were about Max, but they weren't really about Max, right? They were about the community that forms around a thing that Max does. Like in Road Warrior, this is the most obvious. Like, Max doesn't win Road Warrior, like that community does that he helped out, and like they're really like bruised and beaten by it, but they do end up like surviving, and like there's a somewhat happy ending to Road Warrior. Whereas this game felt so much more like the original Mad Max, Mad Max 1, where like, no, it ends with fucking fire and blood and mm-hmm. nobody's happy and Max is more mad and it sucks and everything sucks and nobody's happy. And like that's such in stark contrast to the things that I think broad critical consensus considers the good Mad Max movies, which is like Road Warrior and Fury Road and arguably Thunderdome, which I like, but I understand why people don't. Like, right. It's those are stories where there is like this, there is a growth arc in Max that, yeah, is sort of undone by the next movie because it has to be, but it's not about Max being vindicated by his like solitude. It's about Max being like forcibly taught that he cannot be a lone road warrior anymore. You know?
Right, and this is go ahead.
But hold
Rob,
on.
Please.
But isn't Max always like John Wayne at the end of The Searchers? Like, he might learn a lesson about community. He might learn a lesson about like the value in helping people, like, you know, carve out an existence, helping right a community's wrongs. But he is never going to be invited. He never feels like he can walk through that doorway.
No.
It always returns Max to what we find him in this game, which is somebody unable to leave the past behind him, unable to settle down, always sort of trying to outrun whatever grief and rage is driving him forward. And
that's
then
right.
Against that will, he gets pulled into all this bullshit.
That's right, but we don't even have... I don't feel like Mad Max the Avalanche game really has that middle bit at all. It feels to me like this entire game, and it's why I think this game is like ultimately flawed, is like this game is about Max. It's not about the world outside of Max, really. Like, the game, I don't think, makes any nods to say, like, you should care about these societies because Max doesn't care about them and you are Max. It's not... It feels like it's something that maybe is just hard to do in a video game medium where, like, you're the hyper-powered individual who's, like, making actions in this space. But, like, it overwhelmingly felt to me like, oh, this Max feels like a cardboard because he doesn't really care about doing anything other than killing people. And then, like, Austin, like you said, like, at the end, that's what he does, is he kills
right,
people.
Right, well, I would just push back briefly on the notion that, like, because it's a game, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think about something like the end of New Vegas, the you know, slideshow there. I felt like shit about what happened to the followers of Apocalypse the first time I played through, because through a few sketches, I came to understand that they were a disempowered group who had their heads on their shoulders in the right way. I liked Arcade a lot and wanted him to be happy. And so, like, I do think that games, obviously this is a much different type of game, than that, but games can say something about communities. If you spend time building that community, and this doesn't, right? This has like, oh, I'm in Gut Gash's big ship and there are a bunch of NPCs there and a woman in a cage, and I guess I'm supposed to care about them a little bit, but like, not really. It has Gas Town, where like the first thing you see is a big like Native American neon head spitting out cars, and like that turns into this very strange diesel punk like hell zone. But it never really communicates anything in the world as a place. Like maybe some of Pink Eye's stuff from what I've seen. I didn't finish this game. I should say right now I finished watching it, but I only got up to like when Pink Eye was being introduced, and I was like, oh, she seems cool. But like, there was none of those places felt like, and none of them felt better. Like, this was not a game where Mad Max brought peace to anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that, like, games can't do this. I just feel like this game, it feels so bizarre to me that this game, which is a Mad Max game, and I feel like, at least in my interpretation, Mad Max is always a story about the communities around Max. It's not so much about Max. And then this just totally biffs that entire concept and is like, yeah, it's about Max. He's very angry. And isn't that cool? Like,
okay. Like, I want to also move for Rob, because Rob, you said to us last night that you 180'd on this game and now think it is a minor masterpiece of grindhouse gaming.
That was a DM. Do not put me on blast like that.
I like this. If there's a spectrum here of reactions, I think Cameron is spitting the most guzzling, and you are probably its most ardent defender, Rob, and then Dante is a little bit closer to Cam, and I'm a little bit closer to you. So I'm here as an ally, and I'm just, hey, let's talk about what we liked here.
He's really teeing you up.
I'm trying my best to.
So what do you talk me out of it. This game's no. I actually. Okay, let's go back to Chum Bucket real quick.
Please.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, because something I really enjoy about that character is just everything he says is this weird, like, mystical, pseudo-religious, like, everything he says makes perfect sense, but you kind of have to translate what he's saying into, like, what he's actually driving at. You know what I mean? Like, he, like, for whatever reason, like, machines have taken on, like, a holy significance for him. And this is how he interacts with the divine. Machinery is how he touches on that. And you, just by virtue of being connected, being a driver, and being connected with old-school muscle cars, are his angel. You are basically his divine agent, brought to him to realize his life's work, the magnum opus. But there is so much he is saying throughout your journey in this world. Like, he comments on things happening around you. He sees things in the distance and makes a remark on it. And it never reads like, sometimes with a character like this, there's a danger that it will sound like they're speaking, like, they are the voice of a fan wiki. And I don't think Chum Bucket does. Chum Bucket sounds like a character in a worldview that seems very consistent and has an odd, like, poetry or music to it that I found kind of irresistible. Like, I really liked hanging out with Chum Bucket. Actually, like, he's kind of what got me on side with this game, because as he is sort of, you know, mumbling on about, you know, the magnum opus and the all the flavor text for the engine upgrades you give yourself are in his voice and his interpretation of how you're upgrading the car, I actually started to get into this game through the character of Chum Bucket, and it sort of got me in the mood to play a game where there ain't going to be too much more to it than you driving a muscle car across the desert and just bashing the shit out of people. But through the lens of Chum Bucket, I was cool with that.
Right. So we had comments on the forum that were very much in line with you, Rob. User Shine basically said the same thing, noting that like it was just cool that the entire game, like encyclopedia, was written in Chumbucket's voice, that it presented a much better version of this than what would have been. Like, imagine the same game with the Buzzards and the Night Boys. I don't remember the names of these fucking gangs, these whatevers. I'll just come up with a bunch of other ones. The Uber Rods and the California Lizards, Gizzards, the California Lizard Gizzards. That's all of them. And, you know, all of those, when it was just where it would just be like, the California Lizard Gizzards are a gang that emerged from an ancient zoo or whatever. Like, that would be way worse than.
And it gets at this notion of
stuff.
This is a world that doesn't even understand its own history very well. You know what I mean? Like, everything has sort of been erased. Like, they're trying to even come to grips with the ruin. Like, what ruins do they exist in the middle of, right? They're not even sure. Like, everything has gotten a little bit, like, warped and twisted by that. There's another moment I really liked that's sort of in this vein. If you go into Gutgash's territory, who's sort of the second major character you meet, and he's running this compound out of the ruins of an old ship. And he's basically he's sort of styling himself as like a Noah-like figure. You know, mm-hmm. we live in the ship because we need mm-hmm. to get ready for when the seas return. Someday rain is going to fall and the oceans will rise and all this stuff. And if, as Max, you drive a little ways away from the ship and you pull out your binoculars, as you play them over the ship, you'll note, first of all, it's broken off at the bow. The ship is in pieces.
Right. That ship's not taking you anywhere with the water coming back.
Right. And that's the thing. He makes this comment. He just sort of observes, you know, ship looks almost peaceful from here, but not seaworthy. And I kind of love this notion that, like, these are these people dedicating their lives to this idea of the oceans are going to return, the rain is going to fall. And even if that happens, they're all fucking doomed. You know what I mean? Like, they have no understanding of what even the prophecy that they're waiting for is, or what it would mean.
I have a question about that briefly. I have a question about that. That's going to start sounding like a real like shitty pedantic like, but it isn't Mad Max, but actually, I think maybe there's something else deeper than that, which is. That first Mad Max movie takes place, quote, a few years from now, right? And it's about the collapse, in which lots of living people know what a boat is and know that a boat can't not have a bottom on it if it wants to float. And so partly, I just want to have us talk briefly about, like, why is it that no one remembers how boats work? How far away are we? How quickly did we descend into this? But I guess more interestingly or more... The thing I really wanted to know was, like, is this about trauma? Is this about something that goes past literal specific material knowledge and is more about a sort of emotional knowledge? Is about psychological loss? Is about just – or is about this deep cynicism that is very just, you know, up and down that, like, oh, actually push us away for 5 years and some things that we thought we knew very clearly will disappear?
I will say that my personal, like, headcanon interpretation of Mad Max has always been that, like, Max is quasi-supernatural and he's lived a really ass long time, which conveniently skirts around, like, these time things. But, like, even... Because then you have to start thinking about, like, well, why in the 80s movies is blah, 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 blah. And then you do get really pedantic and pointless, and that's not really what I'm caring about. But I do think there is something to the idea that, like, well, maybe this is only, like, 20 years after, quote-unquote, the apocalypse. But one thing that I think is really interesting that the game gets into that not much other Mad Max media gets into is that this apocalypse was really slow. This is not a Fallout, like, oh, the bombs dropped and then we're screwed. This was like, no, people had pretty normal lives during the events of the quote-unquote apocalypse.
Right.
And I feel like that does reach towards some sort of, like, well, this is like a slow generational trauma of, like, yo, we thought our lives were this thing, and it's not like we woke up and they weren't. It's like, no, over 20 years, we went from living in a city to living in the small towns outside the city to living in the desert to fucking making cars that have flames that shoot out of them, you know, over a period of a rather long time. And I don't know. I think that the thing that does connect which I think gives it some validity is like, well, that's Max's journey. We know that's Max's journey, because even if you like time aside, we know that he was a pretty normal dude who just got really traumatized and spent the rest of his life failing to work through that trauma. And if you want to draw a parallel between that and like the world, you can.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is like, or you can say it's been 100 years. Like those are your options.
No, because I think even that is drawing something, right? Which is that like what happened in the world to create a person who would last 100 years, and and the reason they last 100 years is because they can't ever process their psychological trauma, right?
Yeah.
So Cam, I think that's you nipping at the bud. Someone has a thing ready to say.
No, I take kind of the, this is a weird thing to say, but I take the Road Warrior very seriously.
Good. Listen, yeah,
I'm here
good.
For it.
Wait, the movie or the idea?
Well, the concept of my destiny as a Road Warrior.
Oh, I see. Yeah, of course.
But but the movie, because it's entirely framed by the history man, right, who's like the kid from the middle of the movie, and at the end of that film we find out that the little kid grows up to be the adult who's telling us the story. And I find the way that movie frames that whole narrative and the way it's told to be a compelling framework for thinking through the rest of the movies and even this game too, of like, this is a myth, right? This is a Max, a composite person that might have, you know, it's kind of, it's I think very much on purpose, kind of Jesus Christy, right? Like there might be a historical figure that matters here, but in reality, it's this big composite myth that a lot of people find importance in. And that allows us to tell us all kinds of stories about quote unquote universal themes for our, like social situation. By our, I mean the post-apocalyptic people. So that's like how I take the whole thing, which is why I think I find the narrative of the game so non-compelling, because it is not mythical. It's not about a person like it is not about the good lessons to learn for your community, which is like what myths are all about, right? It is about a dude who's just kind of a jackass who meets a bunch of people in a row and then does fetch quests for them.
Right, it is like the myth that the tribe's cynic would tell to undercut the kind of hero myth of the Road Warrior. It's like, that's not what that motherfucker was about. I knew that guy. Let me tell, Griffa shows up to your tribe one day and is like, actually, I knew Max, and let me tell you about Max. He didn't care about anybody ever except himself. He could never help anyone. He could only ever help someone when he made it into something transactional. He will not save you or teach you anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of how the Mad Max universe is it's bleak, it's post-apocalyptic, it has little glimmers of hope, and that's like what make those stories, I think, really work. There is not a single glimmer of positive hope in this game.
And
so I think it fundamentally misunderstands like the stakes of Mad Max stuff.
Which is where I went 100% agree with you. And I would also say that's what made it so much more frustrating is that Fury Road exists. And Fury Road did all of this, like, in my mind, perfectly. Where it's like, it is mythical. You do get, like, this kind of on-the-ground Max stuff. He is kind of just, like, a smarmy dick. But by the end of it, and, like, the way that it's framed, you're not meant to really relate to Max. But the game, you relate to everything Max does. Like, you're the one who's just going around punching dudes. Like,
you do a lot of punching in this game. It's Max, way too much.
Yeah, Max ceases to be mythical, and he becomes mundane and, like, just kind of a dick. Like,
so, I'll say one thing is that I wonder how much better this game would make sense if it had maintained its connection to Fury Road as seemingly was intended during its development cycle. This is a game that was, if you, you know, by all accounts, and if you look into the development stuff, like, George Miller was involved at an early point in it. Corey Barlog, or Barlog, was involved for a little while on this project. And there was absolutely a goal to kind of tie the two together very directly. Mm-hmm. And by the time it was released, it was kind of non-canonical, even though it shared character names that go beyond Mad Max, and even beyond Immortan Joe, who's mentioned briefly here, like the character, what is her name? Glory, the little girl who dies in this game because this game treats its women characters really fucking poorly, is the little girl who's yelling at Max at the beginning of Fury Road. Now, the version that's in Fury Road who's yelling at him is the one from the comic book, but like that comic book feels like an edited version of this game's story exactly. With Glory, with, you know, like, it's doing all that stuff. And so there is a version of this, like, if I had to make peace with the narrative here, it's that Mad Max drives away in the Interceptor, and then 30 seconds later, yeah, all of the War Boys show up and just fuck him up with the thunder poons.
Thunder poons.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, look, they can't all be winners.
You're right. And then, you know, the reason that he is the Max he is in that movie is because he'd been the Max he was in this game. But that doesn't solve any of the deeper problems with, like, the grossness around this story and around the reduction of every character in this game, but especially the women, as, mm-hmm, like, stepping stones forward for him and never as characters in and of themselves. Which, it's bad. It's not great. I don't know. Do you want to keep talking about story stuff, or should we talk about punches?
I guess for me, I just have a much less... I have a much colder view of this franchise, I guess, in a lot of ways. Like, I don't think most... Like, I think Fury Road is the outlier. Like, I think Fury Road is fresh in memory, and it's probably the most spectacular movie of, you know, in the franchise, but... It's the only one that leaves me feeling an ounce of, like, genuine hope or uplift at the end of it. Like, The Road Warrior is a bleak fucking film. Like, I do not... Yes, like, things are better for that community at the end, but everything you've seen of that world is that it's squalor all the way down. It's squalor and precarity all the way down. He is helping people maintain the most gruesome sort of subsistence, you know, in this wasteland imaginable. And yes, he does put down some really bad dudes. but at the same time, like, I don't really look at the Mad Max franchise and see a really strong message for on behalf of, like, community and forging bonds with other people. Like, Fury Road, I feel that very palpably, you know, through its arc, through the character of Furiosa, and sort of the fact it ends on an actual revolution and water, a potentially limitless source of water being tapped. That movie for me is the outlier. For me, like, this game feels very much of a piece of the Mad Max movies that I've seen in the past and didn't particularly like because they were so grim, because they were so unrelentingly bleak.
I think that's the power, and this is why I care so much about The Road Warrior, because I think that that's right for the first and the third movies. But what is so glimmer of hope for me at the end of The Road Warrior in particular is, yes, like, this is not a world that is accessible for Max. Like, he does, you know, have to go off and become the cowboy that can't be re-brought into society. I mean, this is like classic, Western cinema kind of stuff. But that the people of that community are going to their promised land, and the final monologue of the history man being old implies that they got there, right? Like, there is this, the fact that the story can be told means that Mad Max is the agent of it happening. And I think this is kind of what Dante was talking about earlier. Like, Rob, I think you're 1,000,000% correct, because the problem is that this can't be... Like, it has to be nihilistic and pessimistic for Max.
Yeah.
And the fact that we are focusing in on Max in the game is what creates, like, the inability of seeing positivity, because positivity always happens for other characters when it occurs.
Except for here, where the game is just not interested in that, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There was
a version of this game where you leave Jeet's territory, you leave Gutgash's territory, and the last thing you do is, you know, you've secured, even if it is transactional, you've secured the part for them to fix their ship. The rain may never come, but if it does, their ship will be ready, right? Mm-hmm. And there is something there, and that's just not it, right? That's just not the thing. So let's talk a little bit about, I think, the thing that we probably mostly agree upon, which is that the driving feels really good. And I'm curious if there is a way to pull that, like, what does the version of this game look like that does zero in on that stuff? I mean, I think this was one of the big notes from the forum users, users Ciphers and Mango and Yuri Librarian. Yuri Librarian actually disagreed here, which is interesting. But Ciphers notes, the amount of time spent outside the car becomes truly egregious and never feels dangerous. For a setting which the car is supposedly your lifeline and can raise to a deity-like symbol, it sure does a lot of making you get out of your car. I didn't realize the scope of this issue until I had thoroughly lost a fight in a car-to-car combat, pulled off the road to repair. I was sure that this was over, that the war boys were just going to run me over and call it a day. Instead, they pulled up, stopped the car, and got out, and then became a fist fight. And I think that that's really telling, because I think this combat's pretty okay. I think it's like an all right version of the Arkham Asylum model with some good wrestling moves in there. There's some really good German suplexes in here. And in a game that didn't have this other mode of interactions, other mode of being, which is driving the fuck around and slamming your car into things and taking cool jumps, I wouldn't even notice that the on foot combat was more mediocre than the next nearest Arkham Asylum knockoff. You know, so how do y'all feel about that stuff?
I will say, this is like my one thing that I'm coming into this with, is like, I have 100%ed one game in my life, and it's Arkham Knight, and I don't really even know why.
That's a one to choose.
That's a lot of Riddler puzzles.
Yeah, no, it's a whole fuck ton of Riddler puzzles. It's the third one.
Big,
it's the third
open. Yeah. Oh, it's the third one. What's the Arkham City is Arkham, the second one, right?
Yeah.
Jeez,
yeah.
You've 100%ed Arkham Knight?
Yeah, it's really bad.
That's like the Joel Silver one.
It's really bad. I mean, like, well, because I needed to get that secret ending. Okay, anyway, the reason I bring that up is because obviously, like, yeah, the Arkham games, I'm familiar with their combat systems, and Mad Max has always felt like it was perfectly passable. Like, I didn't hate it. There were some people who I know, like, really didn't like it, and I was like, I don't know, it's fine. It does everything I want it to, and I really enjoy that type of combat. I will say, the way someone who you're reading off the comments in the forum said something to this effect, but like the way that it deals with like the hybrid car combat foot combat is really weird. Like, yeah, because you can do that. I know this because like you can kind of manipulate the game into like, okay, my car is dying, so I'm just going to get out of it, because it like aggro pulls all the enemies to get out of their cars, which doesn't make any sense. Because me as Max, I'm running over all of them if I can. Like, are you kidding me?
But if you park your car next to a rock, they're like, "Oh,
what? Okay, time to fight." And I'm like, "Why are you doing this? Like, it's a bad idea."
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'll say the one downside for me in the car stuff was the failure for it to this game doesn't let me build different cars, really. It lets me build better cars. It lets me put different, like, a different case on it. But, like, I came into it expecting to be like, oh, do I want, like, the real tough, burly brawler car? Or do I want the one that goes real fast? But it, and not only does it not let me do that in terms of what the skill trees are, but it also doesn't – it doesn't even let me do it, like – because everything is unlocked at the same rate, basically, it doesn't really even let me have moments where I feel particularly burly or particularly fast. And I wouldn't need to. The game doesn't demand that of me. It demands that I be, like, pretty much down the road all the way, down the middle, all the way through the game.
It implies that that will matter. Like, the entry is the Archangel idea.
I know.
Where it's like, and look, you know, I love me some Chum Bucket. But, like, he does not, he doesn't sell it. Like, he's like, oh, we gotta put these different archangels for the magnum opus. And it's, like, it's all these different, like.
Sorry, wait, hold on. We gotta go back.
Sorry, Rob, was that one more time? Can I get that?
Can you? That's fine.
No,
I mean, so Chum Bucket says, Max, my dear boy.
We need
to create different archangels, whereupon we can put them on the magnum opus. and so it's this idea of these purpose-built versions of the magnum opus that will be, like, good at some things, and they'll excel at certain things. They'll be for something. And that goes by the wayside because, like, the archangel idea ends up being kind of pointless because you still want the max level everything.
Yep.
Everything's kind of broken by the engine mechanic, which is just straight upgrades. Everything else has sort of give and take, but the engines are just like, no, a bigger engine is always better in every circumstance. And I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah. And there are things that are just like the harpoon is the same way. The fire thing is the same way. And I think maybe even more importantly than this is, I do so much more fist fighting in this game than drive stuffing that if I'm going to have scrap, the first thing I'm going to upgrade is actually Max himself, because that's where I'm going to have combat trouble. I want more life or I guess more armor or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want all of my moves unlocked. I want better knuckle dusters. I want more gun ammo. And that's really boring because that's the part of the game that isn't that exciting to do. And you do it so much, and so many fights end with, like, the same copy-paste boss fight against a big dude, which I get. In the post-apocalypse, I feel like the true, like, mini-bosses will be the big dudes among us. If you have, like, a 7-foot-tall, like, burly boy, he's gonna be a mini-boss in the post-apocalypse. I just wish
my day is coming, basically.
Your day is here.
Your day's coming.
L.A. Rob is definitely a mini-boss in Mad Max 2.
L.A. Rob? That's your Mad Max name. Why didn't we not use that?
Why didn't we notice that? That's true.
As far as the driving goes, I love the driving, and I love the way this game looks and the way those two things interact. Like, it's tough for me to put my finger on, but like, the way the camera moves over the ground as the car is, like, bouncing along broken terrain. Like, the camera will sort of, like, twist and wiggle on different axes that are sort of independent of your car. Like, the camera feels like it, too, is, like, in a chase car going over the same broken ground.
That's a really good note.
Trying to stay on your tail. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I never got bored of just driving around this wasteland, because even getting from point A to point B, if nothing happened at all, it still felt like this epic, dramatic moment with, you know, weird lens effects that my headlights briefly, like, being framed, like, as these, like, coruscating beams coming out the front of the car, and then, you know, wheels away into the night. All that stuff looks, feels fantastic, and goes a long way to making a fairly repetitive and simplistic open-world design feel fresh as you go through it.
Yeah. I love the ways in which these cars turn around to take corners, especially.
Yeah.
These, like, there's a sort of drifting. There are two types of drifting in the world. One is the way you drift down Japanese mountains, as you may have seen in Initial D or in Tokyo, like, Fast and the Furious Tokyo, like, Drift.
Toge racing. Oh.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. The other is this sort of post-apocalyptic, huge, wide arcing turns that you can only do when there are no roads, where your tail whips out, you know, behind you and kind of comes to a slow, bouncy stop and kind of realigns itself. And I think, like, I'm watching footage of this game now, so much is that camera, that tail cam. You're not wrong, Rob. That does feel like it's a handheld camera, which is a very rare thing.
And you have to keep reorienting it around your car. Because your car, like, if it turns, the camera isn't going to turn with it.
Right.
So you actually have to keep reorienting it yourself. Mm-hmm. Which means that during those sweeping turns, chances are you end up lagging behind the turn. And so the car goes skidding one way, the camera stays pointing its original direction, and so you get these great views of just, like, you know, dust getting kicked up from the tires, the wheels spinning for traction.
Yeah.
It's tremendous.
It's like it emphasizes the turn. I feel like that's especially true when you pull down the scarecrows. And you like you catch it with the tow cable and just like pull that thing away and your front tires lift up off the ground. Oh, that feels so good.
Well, it actually reminded me a whole lot. I really like the way this conversation's happening, especially Austin, you talking about how these are the kind of turns you can only do when there are no roads, because this feels incredibly similar to the driving in Mafia 3 to me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is another game with, like, wide turns. And,
you're right.
Slightly out of control, and the camera very specifically does not catch up with you on a turn. And people found that infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, it feels good.
You know, annihilated. And I really enjoyed it in that game. Yeah. But as soon as I started playing in this game, I was like, oh, this is the similar kind of thing.
You're not wrong.
And but weirdly enough, I then, if maybe fitting it into a pre-existing game experience I had or something like that, I did get bored driving. I didn't find it particularly engaging after the first couple hours, which is a bummer. I felt like it was a chore after a while.
I definitely ended up liking just driving around. Like, that part stayed with me. The thing that I thought I would love forever was convoys, and that stopped being the thing I was excited by eventually. And that was a huge surprise to me because people had really spoken them up.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it didn't, eventually those lost their splendor for me, but like, the light hitting my car just that special way as the sunset and everything kind of turned pink, or like, you know, busting through the wall of the storm and entering the middle of that storm.
God.
That stuff still feels really fucking
so
great.
Cool.
Okay, what?
Wait,
go ahead.
I wanted to touch this briefly because, like, okay, convoys. Yo, I think that I was talking to someone about this recently, but, like, I honestly feel like that should have just been the game.
Yes.
Like, why?
Yes, they should have built a whole game around that had way more depth.
Right, because another thing that I realized that I didn't think about until after I'd finished the game is there's one truck in this game, and it's the final boss. There's one big-ass vehicle, and, like, while I do think
and
that...
And it's not even that big.
It's not even that big. It's not as big as the Warwick. It's not as big as the Warwick and the Fury Road. Anyway. But the one thing I will say is, like, I think that this game, what kept me liking the driving a lot was that I never felt like these are performance cars. They never felt like, they always felt like you're struggling to, like, start them up. Like, you're struggling to, like, get enough initial momentum to keep them barreling forward. And I really, really liked that feeling. Because, I mean, it's perfect. It's perfectly Mad Max. That's, of course, what you want from a Mad Max title. But yeah, the convoys, I wish they were bigger and more. My thoughts on the convoys, because I enjoyed the action of them. I felt it bizarre that they were like a side activity.
Very rarely anything like them in the main story content.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And also, here's another note that I maybe is even... speaks back to a lot of what we were talking about before in terms of the goals of this game not necessarily being in line with what works with Mad Max as a franchise. You're always the chaser in this. You're always the one who's giving chase to the convoy, attacking the convoy. What made the chase sequences in Fury Road so special were that they were on the defensive or they were trying to bust through. And you know, it's the war rig and maybe another car. Eventually the bikes, you know, but it's a small force versus a big one, and you're never under siege in that way in this game. And it would have been really cool to, because I feel like this game, I feel like I would have, there are a few moments where you In a convoy fight, you can start to feel a little overwhelmed when there are like four or five enemy cars that like kind of pile it around you, and you lose the ability to disengage the way you might want to. And I would love to have had that feeling from being attacked instead of being the aggressor, where like my goal would be to get away, not my goal would be to stay engaged long enough to win this fight. And I think, again, I think that just says something, right? This is a game about winning a fight. It's not a game about crossing the plains. It's not a game about survival. It's a game about killing other things. Yeah. And that limits the perspectives that you might see put to play.
Yeah, I think part of the problem for me, I like the convoys in concept, and I especially liked when you were chasing a convoy and maybe you took a turn wrong, or you thought you were going to take a shortcut and you didn't take a shortcut, so then you have to catch up with them
and
again.
And you're in a canyon or something suddenly.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Or you just ran directly into a wall. That happened to me more than one time. But there is something... what makes the Fury Road convoy stuff, and even the Road Warrior convoy stuff, exciting is there are, like... moments where someone fires a harpoon gun, you know, or whatever, at an assailant, and it kind of deflects off, or it does something bad, you know, like it kind of half sticks in, or it sticks into the fuel tank, and that makes the other car slow down, that kind of stuff. This is literally like, you whip your harpoon around, and whoops, sorry, you need a level 4 harpoon. So, sorry about that. You might as well just not have bothered. And like, that is a huge motivation killer. In the middle of that, like a very tense and like Rob was talking about the camera, it just like whips around perfectly and it goes into slow-mo. Mm-hmm. Like so many great parts are in that are ruined by like basic video game ass stuff, which is a bummer.
Yeah, it's this complete failure to build systems around the car combat that will keep it fresh. Like the idea of there's a version of this game where damage is super modular and it matters a great deal. Like, what component do you target with the harpoon? Oh, you whiffed
it.
The Horizon
Zero Dawn style of like sub component, or like the TIE Fighter version.
God. Oh, that'd be good.
That would be very good.
So, I mean, stuff like that would have been really cool. More to do than like, yes, it is fun to go like barreling into somebody at 100 miles an hour and just like smashing them. But for one thing, like it never looks as spectacular as it feels like it should. You know what I mean? The car kind of bounces off, but it's really only until you've chipped enough damage that a car really just like explodes the way you want it to.
Right.
When you really T-bone it. But more than that, it's just this... The entire damage model, the way the combat works, is just way too much about like grinding other cars down until they run out of hit points and explode. And yeah, I'm with you, Cam. I am dying for this version that is a little bit more like those battles in the desert in Fury Road, where like, you know, lines are getting fouled, there's people on your car. If there were some, if your shotgun wasn't just a magic like death wand that you can like wave at fuel components and like cause cars to explode, but is instead like a little bit more Mad Max like, where you are desperately trying to like work a sawed off onto your driver's side window to blow someone off it. Like, I miss all that shit. Like, the combat, I love driving in this world. I didn't love car combat as much as I thought I would.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, is this a case of all of us on this call just being more attracted to like simulation-y games? Because I feel like a lot of the complaints we're saying is like, yeah, it's too arcadey. Like you just hit the button and stuff happens. Well, yeah, and I mean, like, I want that. But I feel like the game that they were making, and I'm not saying I agree with this exactly, is like, but the game that they were making feels like, well, you know what's really hot right now? Batman. Like, what if we make like an open world game, but like it looks like Mad Max and there's cars? And like, I think they somewhat succeeded at that, although I'm very much with all of everyone else, I think, in saying like, I would have preferred the game that was a little tighter, was a little more fiddly, you know, was a little more like modular damage, and you got to care about like what stuff's on your car, and shooting is a difficult, arduous task, you know.
Sure, but like I guess I'd say let's contrast this though with like Just Cause 2 or 3, which Just Cause 2 is this team, right? Mm-hmm. And that game is no more modular, let's say, but it feels at any moment like more could happen. Because you can go into stunt position, because you are tethering things together, because there are so many more objects in the world that can explode in weird ways and change the effect of what's happening. And I don't necessarily think that Just Cause 2 holds up as well as maybe it did that one summer that it took us all by surprise.
No, it really does. I played it last year. It's still really good.
Right. And so, but like, I guess my question is like, so then Cam, if you played it recently, does it still feel like at any moment, any fight could become this like totally, almost surreal, action sequence where it becomes like the classic story factory, right? The classic, like, super, not emergent necessarily, but like dynamic yes. action sequence.
It does feel that way, but there are like immediately a million reasons why that is true that come to mind. The first is that it has kind of the Grand Theft Auto style wanted system,
right?
Which means that it can constantly populate the local combat scenario with more and more stronger, enemies. So it's, you know, the reason that it's dynamic feeling is that the game is just constantly pumping stronger stuff.
Right. The reason is it is dynamic. Is the answer.
Dynamic, right? Right. And for fiction reasons, right? You can't. I mean, theoretically, you could, but it feels to me like they want to keep the abandoned, survivalist.
Because think about the convoys. Think about seeing the dust of the convoys as it is already on the distance.
This game has such gorgeous dust.
Incredible dust. But imagine seeing the dust of a convoy coming at you from the distance. You know what I mean? That would be incredible.
God. You just say that there's like a wanted area, right? And then they patrol the area afterward, and you can get longer effects. Right. And we know that like those systems were in games 5-6 years ago. So like people knew about those kind of design ideas. Another reason that I think, and I think this is really big for me, I played this on the PlayStation from the PlayStation Plus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in Just Cause 2, which I was playing on the Xbox 360 when I played it most recently, the time between death and reloading is like 15 seconds, 10 seconds maximum. The load times on the PS4 version, I would like whip out my phone when I died. I would get my phone out and I would like check Twitter and like respond to things. And then I would come back to it because it's literally a minute and a half. It took forever.
I think that really
matters.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we can talk about like the most classic versions of this, of like Tony Hawk levels you can restart in a half second. Yes. And I kind of want my action games to feel like Tony Hawk. And Just Cause 2 does, right? Just Cause 2 is the Tony Hawk pro skater 2 or 3 of action games. So, I mean, I guess Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 or 3 is the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 or 3 of action games. But you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We should briefly, we've been like dancing around it a little bit. The dust looks great. The skyboxes look incredible. I don't know that I've seen skies that look better than this outside of like Halo games, maybe. And that's such a different thing that I even feel bad about the comparison a little bit.
You know what this reminded me a lot of? Like, this brought back memories of Prince of Persia Sands of Time. Like, do you remember when you climb to the top of the towers at night in that game, and like you'd look over as all like all those like cursed sands were blowing across the desert and just like smothering it in that like ever widening dust storm and like swallowing up the city around you. And it just had this like menacing beauty to it. This game, like, brought those memories rushing back, because, like, you see similarly just, like, eerie, creepy sights. Like, the fact you become acutely aware that you're driving around what used to be an ocean when you, like, come to the edge, like, one of the edges of the world, and you look out, and you see these massive mountains, but they're in these trenches, you know, because it's the ocean. You see these massive mountains sort of shrouded in this, like, eerie haze. That like really brings out the sense of like alienness and hostility. It's really incredible to see, and it feels like it's of a piece. Like when the storm blows up, it feels like the skybox has come alive and is interacting with you, which is something that most games that boast great skyboxes don't really do. The skybox is something that implies a world that you can never really reach. It's never really brought to you.
Right.
In Mad Max, that world can sort of strike at any time.
Yeah.
It's static, that stuff, and then it becomes not static in a very noticeable way.
those moments of deciding to drive into the storms are, I wish more games had moments like that. Obviously they kind of tease you and they say, hey, there's really good upgrades in there if you can find them. That they are like from these kind of floating scrap boxes. But just the feeling of like, all right, I am going to hit the pedal and drive into this wall of dust is, like, I'm sure someone early on in the production of this game wrote that down, and like, we have to figure out how that should feel awesome and scary all at once. Like, awesome in the dictionary definition version of the word awesome. And they did that, and that was shocking to me. I didn't expect to actually like those that much. Did y'all go diving into the storms much at all, or were you just kind of ducking out and hiding while they blew around?
Well, I definitely dove in, but I would also say, like, the ducking out is just as interesting. Like,
sure. That,
like, it reminded me a lot. So, confession, I have not played Breath of the Wild yet, but I've listened to a million people talk about Breath of the Wild. And at this point, like, I feel like, oh, yeah, the storm mechanic in that feels similar in that, like, it's not impossible to play in the storm. It just dramatically changes the way that you interact with the world. And like for me in Mad Max, that meant like, okay, it was the one time in the game where I did feel pursued, right? It was the one time in the game where it was like,
right. Okay,
I can't do anything about this. I just got to keep going. I got to get out of here right now. And that was really cool.
You can't hop out of the car and have a fist.
No,
fight
yeah,
the
you can't. It's like the yeah. one thing in the game that doesn't allow you to do that. So yeah. I appreciate that.
Totally. Any other major points here about the kind of the aesthetics, about the mechanics, anything in that space?
I mean, do we want to talk briefly about why this is an open world game?
Yeah.
Do you have an answer?
right, like, other than, you know, what Dante was saying earlier, right, of like, well, that's what's in vogue, you know, for the
okay.
release window.
Avalanche is one answer is Avalanche yeah. knows how to make those games. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that was the right choice as a developer, whether or not that was whether they could have made like a level-based game or something, I bet they could have, but it isn't what their expertise is in. So I'll say that.
Oh, let me rephrase this. Why yes. is this an Ubisoft style open
sure.
world game? Because it's not like an Avalanche open
no.
world game.
No,
like even a little bit.
We'll see when Rage 2 comes out, and if Rage 2 is more like this than like Just Cause 2, we'll have to revisit what an Avalanche open world game is, right?
That's true.
I mean, I feel like it's kind of like partially like it's a consequence of like, well, it's a Mad Max game, and like it's a Mad Max game made in 2015 where they're like, hey, the fantasy of Mad Max is always about, to a degree, about like openness and about like it's a world that you can that is completely different, that you can completely explore because it's the post-apocalypse. Like, it's the same fantasy of like Fallout, I guess. But like,
but is that fantasy about riding balloons very slowly into
see,
the sky?
But see, that's what I mean. Is like that stuff is completely. It feels so like antithetical to the world that they're creating, but it's required because that's how we traverse open worlds. Like it, that I agree. Like it felt really frustrating and like weird because it's like Max is not an explorer. Like that's not. like that, like
right.
that's not part of his character. He's a scavenger. Why would a scavenger care about? I mean, maybe a scavenger. I don't know. Locations of resources. I don't know.
That's why locations
well,
of resources.
There
like,
you go.
Mad Max is a guy you can envision getting to a high place with a pair of binoculars because he has a specific purpose in mind. You know what I mean? Like
yes.
you can see him
yes.
like I need to murder somebody in there or I need to mm-hmm. steal something in there. But you don't like you don't envision Mad Max being like. Ah, yes, a dirigible. I must climb aboard and soar above this land and inventory
yes.
everything around me.
Right, well, in
which,
this way...
Which is why I wonder.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, well, but this is why I wonder, right? Because this is... Mad Max is closer to Rico from the Just Cause games than he is to any of the Assassin's Creed, you know, bros, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, for them, it is about, like, surveying the space and knowing the ins and outs of everything that's happening and who that shopkeeper is and do they sell fabric and can I hide in that bush and all that stuff. But, like, Rico is, you know, just, like, this super spy CIA dude, hitman, basically. Mm-hmm. And he, like, cares about the fact that there is a fortress there and that he can fly to it. And he can, like, wingsuit into it.
And that's
Mad Max feels the same way.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like, here's my, like, super predictable Austin Walker answer to this is, it was like this because Breath of the Wild didn't exist yet. sure. But I think more honestly or more accurately, it's because the way that ideology functions is to disclose possibilities, right? Like, this is the way the game works, because this is the way the game works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why I do value Breath of the Wild so much is Nintendo could have made Mad Max. Nintendo could have given you, it's so easy to imagine Breath of the Wild with balloons, where you get into a little balloon and it plays a little song as the balloon goes up, and then you look around the world and put, and like, and it adds things to your map for you. And instead, Link ends up being a lot more like what Max should be like, which is like, which is what Dante was saying, which is, where are resources? What could I go do? Is there something cool for me over there, you know, to figure out? I mean, for that matter, Breath of the Wild is also kind of a post-apocalyptic game that does a better job of presenting communities and making you feel, you know what? I'm going to say Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is my favorite Mad Max game. So
we got there.
Okay,
got
the one, there. One thing I was
he even has
say
a motorcycle now, so that's like...
So there it is, vehicles.
You know, yeah. His vehicles, there you go.
I was going to say, though, there was an alternate model of open world game, and it was the Batman games. And I don't understand.
Sure.
Like, the Batman games don't have towers. I mean, they do have towers, but they're not for scouting things. They're and, like, I
am
weirdly
right.
an Arkham Knight fanboy now, but, like, but I do feel like – but I do feel like those games did – I think create like, well, this world isn't like artificially gated by like knowledge gates, which are basically what those towers are, right? Where it's like you look around and then you see things. But it still felt hostile and it still felt open. And it felt like they conveyed that sense better than the Mad Max games did, because in the Mad Max game, it was like, ah, Max has to pull out his binoculars every, you know, every 3 miles and make sure he knows where the next healing zone is. I don't know.
It feels like there's an idea here in the game that almost works. Like, on the map, there are the major locations that are sort of sketched out on the map, like, they're part of the map art, right? Like, here are the major landmarks. And you see them on your journey through the wasteland. Like, you will see, like, you can see Gastown for ages before you ever get there. Like, you can see it off there in the distance.
That part's great. I like that quite a bit.
And it, this is one of the things, one of the cool things about, like, Fury Road, again, is that the entire movie almost takes place within telescope's eye view of Immortan Joe's stronghold, right? Like, he sees things happening way the fuck out there in the desert. Yeah. But there's this idea of the desert is largely flat and featureless, but there are these places of, like, meaning and power and maybe even the barest measure of hope out there in the landscape. And a big part of the idea of Mad Max, not the game, but just the conceit of the universe, is that you are forever journeying between these points, right? It is a journey demarcated by places of menace and abuse and terror and places of hope and... like humanity. That is, I think, the best version of what this game is almost going for, and I think it actually might have even gotten there, except that it becomes so fucking Ubisoft open world. Not just, I don't even mind the balloons that much. It is the fact that they felt the need to scatter so much shit around that world, like birdseed. Like, it's Mad Max, but Mad Max is a fat pigeon in a park. And the wasteland is just a kindly old retiree with just an endless bag of Wonder Bread. That is how that game feels. And I think that's where it goes wrong. Because you end up, like, running around hoovering up all these little pieces of scavenge, pieces of scrap.
God, there's so much of it, and none of it's worth anything.
Yes.
It takes you so long.
Get out of your car. Grab five scrap. Congratulations.
You're rich. That was my biggest frustration with the game as I, like, kept going is, like, none of this matters, and there's nothing even to spend it on, because you pretty quickly get, like, infinite spouts of money by just, like, fixing up the zones or whatever, and then they just give you money, and then it's right.
Well, like they also they give you the ability to hoover up all the scrap, but only after you've already done all the fucking stuff inside that zone.
It's the
and
worst
the first time that I
worst.
Got that ability, when I got that ability, I was like, oh, thank God, finally! And I realized it was only in Jeet's territory. Yep. I have to stop playing today. I can't do this. I can't do any more of this than I've already done.
Well, and it just felt like there was. That game felt to me like for example, they have one of the weirdest things to me in that game, which is the side quests slash hint people scattered in the wasteland, and they're all like the same stock animation. They're like randomized looks. They're also bizarrely the only thing you cannot skip. You can't like press X and skip past their dialogue.
Oh, right.
It's really weird. And then you're like, and most of the time they're telling me something I already know, or they're saying like, and here's some scrap for your service. And I'm like, I don't need this, man. Like, oh, man. What are you doing?
Choicest moment, like early in the game, I run into one of the wastelanders and it's somebody dying in the desert. And they're like, oh, I got caught by the scabs and I got too greedy. Please end it and take my scrap. And the game is like, put the wastelander out of his misery. And I'm like, sure, I guess, but what? How do I do that? I'll just tap square next to it and see what happens. Max curb stomps the fucking wastelander. Like, there's nothing merciful about it. It is fucking like, it is just him like boot, not even to, like. Boot to the center of the guy's back. Like, basically, you just, like, explode the guy's spine and organs.
Jesus Christ.
And, like, that does the job. And it's like, thank you, Max. You truly are the good Samaritan. Have some scrap.
And it just felt like that was such a lost opportunity for some really cool storytelling outside of the city zones that just doesn't happen. Like, the city zones are the only place where you find quote-unquote friendly NPCs other than these wastelanders. And these wastelanders tell you nothing.
And the thirsty
nothing.
People.
And they're, whatever. I'm just calling them wastelanders, I guess. But yeah. They tell you nothing. They mean nothing. They're pointless. And they just feel like such a weird artifact of like, well, we got to have something out here. It's like.
Right.
I guess.
Like, and if any of those characters in the cities were more memorable and more personable or more, not even likable necessarily, but intriguing. We wouldn't even notice that there were all that the random wastelanders weren't that good, because we'd be busy talking about the cool characters inside of the settlements, and that's not what we're doing.
Buddy system. It needs a Far Cry 2 buddy system.
Wait, I don't know.
Well, you already got Chum Bucket, don't you? Isn't the only buddy you ever
need?
He's
really good, but imagine Jeet, like, just his weird, like, hyperactive patter. He always sounds like he's just been, like, chewing, like, instant coffee crystals for, like, the last 3 days. You know, just.
Yeah, well, that'd be cool.
I was going to say, like, this game could just use a fucking dialogue wheel. if this game had, like, detailed conversations with these people in these settlements, I would actually care about going to them. You know?
Right, I mean, there's another model of the open world is the BioWare style or the Elder Scrolls style open world also exists, in which you aren't prizing the sort of like map uncovering stuff so much as you are going to new places that have characters and plots for you to understand, whether or not you're talking about BioWare or Bethesda, right? And we don't really get that here. We get like a little bit of that stuff, but like most of the side quests are kind of dreadful, honestly. Yeah, like, I've gone into too many caves looking for too many old boots or whatever the fuck this game wants me to find.
Did you like the memories?
That is how I feel.
The historical artifacts?
Some of them. I think it was a very hit or miss, you know?
There is a historical artifact of a motorcycle. And Mad Max says, what the hell is this thing? Okay. It's a picture... of a motorcycle.
Yeah,
the post-apocalypse have motorcycles.
Right, well, like not Link in this game, from though, Legend actually. Of Zelda Breath of the Wild. We've been over this.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
he has this is before.
He sees a truck.
Right, so,
what the fuck is that?
To be fair, it might not be his reaction. I think it might be written on the back of it. As if someone was sifting through the wastes and pulled out a picture of a motorcycle, and they were like, what the shit?
And then they wrote on the back of it.
They were like, I need to make sure.
Whoever finds this.
It's like when you get a book from a used bookstore. It's like The Great Gatsby. And it's like, you know, there's the eyes, and there's just a question mark beside it. Like, eyes?
Eyes? What could that be? Like, eyes?
Billboard?
Mean?
I mean,
yeah, it could be anything.
The thing is, I really liked some of those history relics because, okay, like I was mentioning a long while back, I was like, I think this game does conversate with the before times in a way that is makes it very clear that, like, no, it was a slow apocalypse. People didn't know what they were doing. And I like that lore, and I love that world building, and it means nothing to this game. So, like, I mean, like, that's fine. It's whatever. But, like, it is kind of cool. Like, there were some that were like, yeah, I'm just going over to my aunt's to see if I can just chill here until this all blows over. And then it's like, you find it in, like, a abandoned shack on the top of a mountain or something. And it's like,
where two skeletons are playing chess.
Yeah, where two skeletons are playing chess. Skulls by the toilet. Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that stuff works, sort of. Yeah. In this conversation, for very goofy reasons, notably that I have the desire to go a motorcycle at, like, Solid Snake would, I realize there's another model of open world game that we should have mentioned, because it came out the same day that Mad Max did, which is Metal Gear Solid 5.
I'm playing that game right now.
What do you think of it?
Oh, I mean, I played it when it came out, but replaying it at the same time, and I was interspersing it with it in Mad Max. Mm-hmm. In comparison, Mad Max feels like it was made in 2007, or perhaps for the PlayStation 2. I mean, the difference of imagination of what those kind what the kind of interactions that they wanted to do in those two games are, there's a vast gulf between those things.
That is, and I mean, like, I have lots of issues with Metal Gear as a franchise, and even just Metal Gear Solid 5 as a work. It's way too long. It also has very little respect for women, or really for many of its characters, or for the notion of storytelling. But I actually think that as an open world action game, it is the sort of dynamic game that we want, with lots of different player verbs and lots of interesting enemy reactions and AI reactions and a buddy system and good music and some interesting weather moments. Its driving is not as good, but how could it be? You know, and it's not as it's skybox is not as pretty, but the fact that, like, I realize now I was playing Metal Gear Solid 5 when this came out. Of course, I wasn't going to play something that on its face looked so committed to the this thing was like voting for the Ubisoft model. Like, I'm trying to think of a good political analogy, but I'm too tired. Someone who to this, this game is voting for the Ubisoft model, the way people in my life still think Joe Biden should run for president.
Yeah.
It's like just completely disconnected from the realities of the situation.
Well, yeah. And also, I would say notably popular to, I would say, scared stockholders, you know, like this is the type of game. Right. This is the type of game that I'm sure. And I mean, I don't know. I don't want to, like, blame some poor devs at Avalanche, but I'm sure it was like someone higher up was like, well, we got the Mad Max license, what do you want to do with it? It's like, well, we can't screw this up, like, I guess we'll make a game about driving in the apocalypse. All right, cool,
right,
send it off to presses. Like,
well, I imagine if this game ships a year earlier, if this game keeps some of its staff on board, I imagine if this game kind of keeps Miller on board and some of the weird stuff around there's like an interesting legal case involved, it goes some weird directions. I imagine that this game ends up being a little bit more impressive just by releasing under different circumstances. And it just didn't. And it's one of the things that I was curious about going back to it was, now that we are removed from its circumstances, what can we appreciate here? Can we appreciate it? Like, it is a game from 2007 or 2011 or something. And unfortunately, I'm not sure if I go all the way there.
I don't think so. I think like I mentioned before we got on this call, I feel like this game is like the definition of like a B-minus video game. Like, there's some stuff.
That's
in
a high
it.
Score though. That's it's, a pretty that, high
okay,
score.
Okay, fine. Let me say a C. It's a C game. I don't know. When I whatever. I meant like a B game, saying, like, not, you say a B movie, but like a little worse than
you
that.
You said minus, which threw me off.
Yeah,
you say
it did,
that. That's
yeah.
what
but like I just feel like there are a couple things that I like about it. It's notable that it's like the only Mad Max game other than like this 1980s Game Boy game or something that I looked up once. I don't know.
There's a Genesis game that is very clearly a Mad Max game.
What is
that? People should
Wait, but what do you mean by very Outlander? Clearly? Like,
it's Outlander. That's the game I'm talking about. It's Outlander. Okay. Yeah, Outlander is super clearly meant to be a Mad Max game, and I think, in fact, was, maybe?
But the thing is, if we branch into things that are very clearly meant to be like Mad Max, that's a lot of pop culture. Like, that's...
Okay,
like,
no, okay, well... So Mad Max came out on the NES. It was developed by Mindscape, right? Okay. Then they made a sequel called Outlander because they didn't get the license.
I just Googled Outlander.
Oh, so it was very clearly like, no, this was going to be a Mad Max game. Okay.
Yes. When I say, yeah, this isn't, I'm not saying it's influenced by.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
Rob, you said you just Googled this game?
No, I mistakenly Googled Outlander, and I was like, this looks way too horny for SNES, that's for sure. But no, that's a cable costume drama.
Gotcha. Hmm. In any case, I think I definitely, you know, we all have our favorite franchises where we're like, oh, wow, I really just want there to be a game of it for me. And I get that impulse, Dante. I do. Rob, before we go, I need you to talk because I'm not gonna hold you to the exact phrasing, but I do want to hear the case for it being maybe not a minor masterpiece, but a something about grindhouse gaming, some version of this. That what does that phrasing mean for you? Why did that come to you in your overall evaluation of the game?
Yeah, because like. It feels to me like there are some things this game does very, very well. Like the artwork, the way the driving feels, like there are some things this game absolutely nails. There are some things that are clearly like within the, like they're playing to the strengths of the creative team behind this game. These are places where they are confident and they have a vision that they are trying to realize. But then there are all these other elements that like, they feel underdeveloped, they feel under-resourced, they feel like maybe a little poorly thought out, and those things like show up very, very clearly, and I can see those limitations. But for me, those highs feel so intense and feel so specific. Like, it's not just that, oh yeah, this game has great driving. This, like, I am going to remember the way driving in Mad Max feels. Versus a lot of other games. Like, that is going to be something that stands out. Like, I like Mafia 3 a lot. I do not remember how cars handle in that game. Didn't really register that much on me. Like, in my head, it's open world, you know, driving, sure, it had it. This game, like, there are a lot of memories and, like, a personal highlight reel of cool shit that's happened to me out in the wasteland in a car that I'm going to remember. All the gorgeous things I've seen out there. It's a place I've visited. It's been a great trip. And I get, like, for me, I guess I'm at a point where I think I cherish that stuff just a lot more than I used to. Like, I look at a game like this, and for all its limitations, for all its flaws, and for all the ways that maybe in some ways it is, like, not really doing a great job of channeling what truly makes the Mad Max franchise great. Nevertheless, this feels to me like a game with not just like, I don't want to say a lot of heart because that sounds really, really cliche, but it feels like a game that wanted to bring a certain feel and mood to life. Right. And it did that. And that goes a long way with me.
That's about as powerful a defense of this game, or at least not even a defense, a powerful exploration of your experience with this game. You speak to why a game like this can be the sort of 7 out of 10 thing that we discussed, or that I wrote about, that critic AVB's written about, as being something that's more than the sum of its parts, something that is truly troubled, but for a certain set of its players produces an effect that is far greater than what you would have gotten from a more polished, a more perfect game. And that's, you know, I think about this with something like this and God of War for me, which is a game that I think understandably scored well given the structure and status quo of game reviews, but would not have scored so high with me. I don't know that I like Mad Max more than God of War, per se. But I left it... I've had a much more interesting conversation about this than even my spoiler. I loved talking with Patrick about God of War, but there aren't enough things to fold over in that game. There aren't enough things for me to, like, chew on that I don't know how I feel about them. Whereas here, there are so many loose ends, so many things of like, oh, I wonder though, what if it had been a little bit better in this way? What if it had gone this direction? And that to me, as an object of play and inquiry, is just always going to be a little bit more rewarding. Which I'm sure infuriates people who just want me to like good video games. like the video game industry, for instance. Any final thoughts from you, Cam or Dante?
I evaluate games based on would I have rather read a book?
Oh, well, that's
like would I have had news. A better time just sitting quietly and reading a book? And sometimes I don't. Like God of War, similar to you, Austin. I played that game. I thought it was whatever. I certainly like Mad Max more than I like that game. I would have rather read a book.
Hearing that, I just had this vivid flash of like, now I realize why some cultures had stonings.
Oh, L.A. Rob will rule this outpost with an iron fist. Those who would prefer books to violent video games like mine will be hung upon the wall and slapped with the stone.
Slap the flat side.
Yeah, the flat side. We don't want to kill you.
The broad side.
But we're not Mafia monsters. 3. Mafia 3, I would not have rather read a book.
Right,
I'd rather play that game than read a book. So this is somewhere beneath Mafia 3.
I love this scoring system you book. Fucking came up with. Oh my god. Greater than a book, less than Mafia 3.
Yeah. There you go.
Any book?
Yeah, exactly. What the fuck is the book?
Is it about? Yeah.
Dennis Miller, The Rants, Book like... One.
Yeah. I just got to figure out what Dennis Miller's all about, man. He's got some great ideas.
Trying to get into that guy's head.
Yeah. I just like perspectives, Rob. So not all books, probably, but just a book that I want to read.
Sure.
I feel like I've talked a lot on this cast already, but I do feel like Mad Max is a game that I really liked, and also I desperately wish was like 25% better. Like, it feels like every single part of that game to me was just like, God, this is cool, but wouldn't it be cool if? And like, there isn't a single part of that game that I don't feel that way about. Like,
yeah,
I wish there was more writing. I wish the characters mattered more. I wish the communities mattered more. I wish Max shut up. I really. Yeah, there was a lot. I don't know.
Yeah.
I still played a whole boatload of it, though. Like,
yeah, same. I want to thank everybody who responded. It's funny. I think this is probably the most hotly contested of our Waypoint 101 so far, and also the one that has generated the most conversation. Partly, that's because it took us 2 months to do it instead of just the normal one. Partly, it's because it's a much bigger game than I think the past ones we've done have been. But... there have been some really great stuff over on the forums at discourse.zone, some really great conversations in our chat on our Discord. I have a lot of things that I wrote down that we didn't get to today because we kind of had the conversations. And so I just want to say really quick shout outs to Eli A, to Benji, to Jem, to Quinn, to Nora and Subside and Hayatal and Dreambaum and Andy and a whole bunch of other people who had such great stuff on the forums. Also, some people posted the best pictures. Really briefly, this game has a really good photo mode and it has a video mode that's really cool, and I wish I had done more with it. I did a stream one day and fucked around with it a little bit, so you can go check that out on our YouTube, youtube.com/waypointvice. I also really love, there was a post in the, probably my favorite post on the Mad Max Waypoint 101 thread, and I know I'm not supposed to pick a favorite, but there's one by Mave, which is number 62 in this 124 posts thread, that makes some comparisons between the George Miller films and the work of like Sam Peckinpah and Kurosawa and Sergio Leone, that is really, really smart and really helped me work through some of my thoughts about the game. Just really great stuff throughout that thread. Some really good deep dives into the game's really bad gender politics, and some you know, a picture of a man with a dog for a head, because that's a thing that happened in this game. And as I was just scrolling through, I was forced to remember that. That is going to do it for us today, I think. Again, I'm Austin Walker. You can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob?
At Rob Zachme.
How about you, Dante?
I'm at Video Dante on Twitter.
What, do you have anything you want to plug?
I wrote a thing for Waypoint.com. Waypoint.vice.com. Yeah, I wrote a thing about the storm at Waypoint. I also write pretty regularly over at Paste Magazine at their games vertical.
Shout out to Pace. Shout out to Garrett.
Shout out to Holly. Yeah. And I also write at a million other places. Again, find me on Twitter at Video Dante. It's where I post everything and talk too much.
If people wanted to support you and your work, is there anything they could do to do that?
Oh, there is that. Yeah. So I didn't know you wanted me to like plug that.
Plug. Okay. It's time to plug.
Yeah. So me and a colleague of mine, Amr Alasser, who also is a writer for a lot of places online,
including Waypoint.
We are restarting a website based around amplifying the voices of underrepresented voices in the games criticism sphere, as well as marginalized voices, basically people who you don't usually hear talk about games. We're going to try and pay them money to talk about video games. And right now we are running a GoFundMe for 4 quarterlies of 6 articles a pop. We're going to have like custom art. It's going to be all looking fancy and stuff. There'll be digital quarterlies. And if you're interested in funding that, you can go to the Twitter account for Deorbital, which is just twitter.com/deorbital, or gofundme.com.
But can you spell that really quick for people who don't, who have not seen the word?
That's smart. Deorbital. And
there you go.
We also have a GoFundMe up at gofundme.com/deorbital-quarterly.
I also just set up a tiny URL, tinyurl.com/deorbital.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
There you go. How about you, Cam? Same questions.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, at ckunzelman, C-K-U-N-Z-E-L-M-A-N. You can also read me every week here at on Waypoint. I write a column at the end of every week. It's about sad stuff, generally.
Endings and apocalypses. Endings. You've written about Mad Max before. You wrote a piece about the game Convoy, actually, and tied that to the hope in Fury Road.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk about Convoy, but people should check that game out. It is an interesting take on...
That's a game in which you are under attack, so...
Yeah, you're kind of the Furiosa role, I guess. I recently started, I do a thing called Ranged Touch. We make a lot of different YouTube and podcast content. You can see that at rangedtouch.com.
You like D&D, let me tell you.
Yeah. We started a podcast recently with Michael Lutz, people might know, called Game Study Study
AKA
Buddies.
Where Warren is Dead on Twitter. Very, very, very smart, critic, cultural critic, game writer sometimes.
Early modernist.
Early modernist. One of my favorite answers I've ever read on a Waypoint Radio episode is from Michael Lutz, and then it was eaten by a computer, so we've never heard it, unfortunately.
Of course.
One day I'll read it into a microphone again.
So you can do all that. You can
One more time. That one is called what?
Game Studies Study Buddies.
It's super good. It's super, super good. I really, really loved the conversation y'all had about Jesper Juul's Half Real. If you are interested in game studies or an academic kind of game analysis and stuff like that, please consider giving them a listen. It's super, super good. All right. With that, that is going to do it for us. Shout outs to Bowen, as always, for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that over at waypoint.zone/BOEN. And I think, you know, here's what I'll say. I don't know what the next one is going to be. I don't know. We'll have to talk about it off mic. But I will say that, Cam, I just gave you a bunch of notes on tomorrow's, or maybe at some time soon, I don't know, based on when we're recording this, who the fuck knows, column, which is all about cyberpunk. I think a lot of people have been bugging. There's been a conversation lately about cyberpunk. I think we may have a responsibility to dip our toes in the genre somewhere. And I have some ideas for games that might fit in there. So we'll maybe...
The Neuromancer game?
The Neuromancer. There it is. We're all going to play Neuromancer. We're all going to play...
For real, we're going to play Rimmer, right?
We're going to play Ripper. Yeah. Actually, I can actually wrap this around, because what we could play is I Have No Mouth, But I Must Scream, which was made with the hands-on guidance of Harlan Ellison, who unfortunately died today. And here's how I wrap it around. Harlan Ellison, of course, his book, short story, A Boy and His Dog, very, very much a precursor to Mad Max in terms of establishing some setting tropes for kind of post-apocalyptic fiction. So shout outs to Harlan Ellison, who, love him or have some issues with him sometimes, certainly, was a pretty powerful sci-fi writer, worth your time. On that note, on the note of the death of a important writer, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back sometime this week, whenever you're listening, with probably another episode of Waypoint Radio. Until then, peace.
So am I the only one who's super into Peppa?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.